Thank you. Matthew 27, starting in verse 32. It says, as they went out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. They compelled this man to carry his cross. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of a skull, they offered him wine to drink, mixed with gall. But when he tasted it, he would not drink it. And when they had crucified him, they divided his garments among them by casting lots. And they sat down and kept watch over him there. And over his head they put the charge against him, which read, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right, one on the left. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross." So also the chief priests with the scribes and elders mocked him, saying, "He saved others. He cannot save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God deliver him now, if he desires him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way. So, Jesus has been tried. He's been up all night. He's been beaten. He's been scourged. Now they're making him carry his cross to the place of execution. And he can't. He collapses. He's too weak to do this. So they get a man named Simon, very common Jewish name. Jesus had two disciples named Simon. And so, extremely common Jewish name. From Cyrene. Cyrene was a region in North Africa, kind of modern-day Libya-ish, right in that area is where Cyrene is. And so Cyrene is obviously in Jerusalem, probably for the Passover, because everybody came there for the Passover. And so, and he's just there. He's just a guy standing on the road. Here's Jesus. He's got the wooden beam on his back. He's going to the place of execution. He collapses, and Simon of Cyrene is probably the guy that just happened to be there. And so the Roman soldiers basically, Simon had no choice. The Roman soldiers basically just said, "Hey, you, come here." And they took him and forced him to carry the cross of Jesus. It's not like Simon, you know, wanted to do it or was being kind or anything of the sort. He just was forced to carry the cross. And so Mark tells us that this Simon who carried the cross was the father of Alexander and Rufus. And what that means is Mark's readers would know who Alexander and Rufus were. He doesn't identify them in any other way. He's identifying Simon by them as if the readers know who Alexander and Rufus are, and he's saying Simon was their dad. And so so they come to Golgotha, place of the skull, and they're going to crucify him. They strip him. They cast lots for his garments. They nail his charge to the top of the cross. "This is Jesus, King of the Jews." And the charge is mockery. Because the king is being crucified. This is your king. That it's mockery, the charges itself. And yet it's true, because he actually is King of the Jews. This is Jesus, King of the Jews. So what they mean is mockery is actually in reality truth. But they don't know that. They don't believe that. And so, and then the people start abusing him. And look who's abusing him, verse 39. And those who passed by derided him, wagging their heads. So these are people passing by. These are just, Jesus is out on Golgotha, he's hanging on a cross, and it's along usually a main thoroughfare where people would walk by, and so people are passing by. They're coming into the city, they're going out of the city, and there they are, and they pass by three people getting crucified, and here's, this is Jesus, King of the Jews, written on the top of this guy in the middle, and they're starting to deride him. So first, this is who's deriding him, just people passing by. Verse 41, so also the chief priests with the scribes and elders mocked him. So now we've got the Jewish leaders are mocking him. They're not passing by. They're there. They want to see the spectacle. They want to make sure this dude is dead. This is what they have worked so hard to achieve, and they want to make sure it gets carried through to the end. And they're there at the cross. They're not passing by. They're not going in and out of. They're hanging there. And so the Jewish leaders are mocking him. But look who else, verse 44. And the robbers who were crucified with him also reviled him in the same way. And so Jesus is getting it from everybody. People coming in the city, people going out of the city, all of the Jewish leaders who are just hanging out there, and the robbers who are hanging on crosses with him. Now we know, of course, from Luke that one of the robbers actually rebukes the other robber and asks for Jesus to remember him, and Jesus says he will. And so that does happen. But he's getting mocked by everybody, just about. And they're mocking him with his own words. You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. That's Jesus from John 2. He said that in John 2. Of course, he wasn't referring to the temple as they think. He was referring to something else, but they don't know that. They're using his words to mock him. Yeah, you got such power. You're going to rebuild the temple. Ha, ha, ha. Look at you hanging on the cross. Now, what you going to do now? This is the attitude. This is first century Jewish trash talk, is kind of what's going on in one sense. Or, you are the Son of God. He said, I am the Son of God. Or verse 40, if you are the Son of God, come down from the cross. Jesus has claimed to be the Son of God. And so they're taking his words and they're throwing them right back in his face and saying, yeah, you're the Son of God, come on. Or you're the King of Israel. That's verse 42. He saved others. He cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross. That's what Messiah was. And Jesus very plainly claims to be Messiah. And so he's claiming to be the King of Israel. And so, come on down. Come down now, Jesus, King of Israel. And so, all in all, from the perspective of the Jewish leaders, from their perspective, what's happening with Jesus right now is going extremely well. Much better than perhaps they had foreseen. They wanted Jesus crucified because crucifixion to them is proof he cannot be the Messiah.
no Messiah ever will be crucified, will be brought to such public shame as this. That he's not Messiah. And that's why they're throwing this back in his face. Because to them, the fact that he's on the cross is absolute proof he's not Messiah. And now they're throwing his messianic claims in his face just to mock him and abuse him. Crucifixion is shameful. It's a curse. And now what the Jewish leaders are doing is they're watching the travelers, just ordinary, everyday folks, passing by on both directions, also abusing him. And this is, see, one of the things they were worried about was, how will the public handle this? They didn't want the public to, you know, turn against them. But what they're seeing is the public is abusing Jesus. If you're a Jewish leader, this is good. This is what you were hoping for. This is better than what you were hoping for. It's going really well from their perspective, because the travelers are mocking Jesus. The people are rejecting him. That is what the Jewish leaders wanted. They wanted the people to reject Jesus. See, they don't just want Jesus dead. They want Jesus shamed. And they've succeeded. Jesus is shamed. The Son of God, the King of all the earth, takes on shame. And the people are being, I would say they're being pretty sarcastic in their abuse and their mockery to Jesus. They're calling him names. They're wagging their heads, probably cursing at him, perhaps. And Jesus just takes it. They mock him because he cannot save himself. So they think. What they don't understand is that he can save himself if he wants to. He simply chooses not to save himself. And so the Son of God, the King of all the earth, has taken upon himself all the shame of sin. And the Son of God, the King of all the earth, has taken upon himself utter weakness as well. He is so weak, he cannot even carry his own cross to his execution. He's nailed to that cross, and he will die on that cross. This is weakness. And the Jewish leaders are now magnifying his weakness. That's the whole point to them. You can't be king. You're so weak. You can't be Messiah. You're so shamed. He saved others. He can't save himself. If you're the Son of God, come on down from the cross now. We'll believe you. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now. This is how they're talking. And so note their mockery. Their mockery is that he's too weak to save himself. That's the whole point of their mockery. Because the Messiah is supposed to be a strong, conquering king. Or so they think. But here's a man hanging on a cross and he can't do anything about it. They think Jesus is weak for staying on the cross. What
they don't understand is that Jesus exhibits great strength by choosing to remain on the cross. Because he could come down if he wanted. He could actually do what they're challenging him to do if he wanted to. But he doesn't. And so Jesus is intentionally embracing the shame of the cross on purpose. And he is intentionally embracing the weakness of death on a cross. He's choosing it. And this very thing, this shame, this weakness that Jesus is undergoing on the cross, is the very salvation of the world. It's crazy, but Christianity's crazy to the world. The weakness and the shame of the cross are the power of God to save us. As you see Jesus hanging on the cross, being shamed, being mocked, you're seeing your own salvation, because that's what's going on. The cross is the power of God. The cross is the salvation of the world. The cross is central to Christianity. The cross is central to what God has done in this world. Paul puts it this way, 1 Corinthians 2:2. He says, "For I desire to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified." People who teach the Bible but who avoid the cross are not teaching the Bible. The cross is like what the Bible all points to. And so if you're skipping like the central part of the whole thing, it's kind of hard to say you're really teaching the Bible when you really avoid that. The cross is that important. People who want to talk about love your neighbor and turn the other cheek, but who don't want the cross, are actually leading you away from God. Because you won't come to God simply by trying to love your neighbor all by yourself, or turning the other cheek, or doing whatever else it is that they happen to like that is taught in the Bible. Because you can't do it. It's the cross that will bring you to God, not your own moral effort. The moral ethic of the Bible is good, but it's not going to save you. That's not what it's there for. Here's what Paul says about the weakness and the shame of the cross. I'm going to go to 1 Corinthians. You can go there with me if you want. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 is where I will be. And we're going to talk a little bit about the cross and weakness and shame that is going on in the picture that we have seen of Jesus on the cross in Matthew 27. And so, 1 Corinthians 1, I'm going to start in verse 17. Paul says, "For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with words of eloquent wisdom, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power. For," excuse me, "the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, 'I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart.' Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since, in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach
to save those who believe. For Jews demand signs and Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and folly to Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For consider your calling, brothers. Not many of you were wise according to worldly standards. Not many were powerful. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are. I'll stop there. Listen to what Paul's saying here. He says, the cross of Christ is the power of God. He says that in verse 17. Because he says, I wasn't sent to baptize, I was sent to preach the gospel, but not with eloquent wisdom, lest the cross be emptied of its power. Next verse, verse 18. For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. The cross is power. Now, we're looking at Jesus hanging on the cross, and the cross is weakness. And yet it's power. The cross is also the salvation of God. It is, to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. It is the salvation of the world. This is where salvation happens. Right here at the cross. The weakness of the cross is stronger than all of the might of America. The shame of the cross and the foolishness of the cross is wiser than all of the teachings of modern psychology. All of the thinking of corporate America. It's wiser than all of the crossless values of your relatives, or your neighbors, or your friends. It's wiser than all of the wisdom of your culture, whatever wisdom your culture happens to have. The cross puts all of these things to shame. Listen to what Paul says. This is verse 27, 1 Corinthians 1. He says, God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. Guys, the cross, with all of its shame, actually shames the wisdom of the world and the power of the world. The cross, with all of its weakness and shame, is going to bring to shame the power of Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and, you know, the government of America. And you think of all of these people who have all this power. The cross shames them. And yet the cross is shame itself. Jesus took on shame on the cross. And yet what he is doing through the cross is going to put to shame all of the wisdom and power of this world. Through the cross, Christ overcomes death by going through it. That's how he overcomes it. It's upside down. The power of God is a cross. The wisdom of God is a cross. The shame of the cross is glory. The weakness of the cross is salvation. People love Jesus' teachings about the weak. You know, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. This, you know, Jesus talks this way, right? You know, let the little children come to me. Jesus talks about the weak, those who don't have power, a lot. And what people who love that teaching oftentimes don't actually believe the teaching that they say they love. For Christ didn't just teach that. He lived it. He emptied himself, and he made himself nothing. He became obedient to death, even to death on a cross. He didn't just teach about the weak. He became weak. It's a different... People love the teaching. It's just that he did it. Don't just talk about the teaching. Look what he did. On the cross, he took on sin to free us from sin. If you want God, the cross must be central. It has to be central. The cross is what separates Christianity from every other religion on earth. There are other things that separate it too, but that is an enormous thing that separates Christianity from every other religion on earth. It separates Christianity from every other philosophy on earth, from every other idea that's out there. The world just does not think this way. Muslims hate the cross. They actually deny that Jesus even died on the cross. Secular Americans mock it. Or ignore it. One or the other. But it is the power of God for the salvation of the world. That's what it is. It's important for us as Christians to meditate on the cross daily. Daily. See, the world will feed you everything except the cross. The world will not feed you the cross. You go online, you go on TV, movies, music, name it, news, wherever, neighbors. They will feed you their wisdom, and they will feed you what they want you to know, and I will guarantee you the cross will not be part of it. That's not the way this world works or thinks. The world will tell you to go be good, as if you actually could. The cross will remind you that you're a sinner who can't be good without Christ, and that Jesus has absorbed your sin to make you right. Totally different way of looking at life. The world will go tell you to make money or enjoy sex or go live the good life or go, you know, enjoy your entertainment or whatever, food, wine, travel. Go live the life. The world will tell you all that. The cross will remind you that that life that they're telling you to live is worthless in the end. It doesn't amount to anything. We were talking about that earlier with kids, you know. If I could pick one thing, what would I pick? Well, it wouldn't be the good life. That's not what I would pick. And there's a reason for that. Now, the world would. It would pick that. The cross will remind you that you must die to that good life, so to speak, so that you can have God's real good life, the good life God has for you. The cross is at odds with this entire world system and the way it thinks and the way it operates. And so because the world system that we live in will remind you and me 24/7 of everything but the cross, you and I need to constantly remind ourselves of the cross, because you're going to get no help from the world on that. You're going to have to, as you mentioned, Chris, be disciplined to really focus on the cross, because the world will take your eyes off the cross every chance it gets, because it does not want you there. And so we've got to constantly remind ourselves of the cross. If we don't, we're just going to be like the world, because that's what we're going to be fed. So then, Matthew 27, Jesus is hanging on the cross. Behold, your king. That's your king. Who has the charge, King of the Jews, nailed on top of him. Don't ever forget it. That's your king. On the cross. And this cross is the power of God for your salvation. And this cross is the portrait of how you are to live also, dead to this world. That is a biblical concept. If Christ was so weak, you are to be so weak too, in many ways. If Christ was shamed, so will you be. And this world will shame you. If Christ emptied himself of all that this world offers, so must you. This is the cross. Now, I want to close by just asking us to pray for a clear picture of the cross in our lives, and for us to embrace that cross in our lives. And so I'm just going to give you a time to pray, and then I'll close us in prayer in just a moment. But I want you to ask for God's grace to focus you. Maybe, you know, today's January 1st. Maybe this is a good New Year's focus, so to speak, to focus us on the cross of Christ this year, as opposed to what the world will feed us.